I like tights, man. I like it. It's
good. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
When I'm reading it, I'm like, yo, this has like the boys vibe. It has Invincible kind of vibe. I like the aspect of, and I don't know where the story is going after issue two, but I like the aspect of you're just getting the point of view of this regular judge who's putting all of these wannabe superheroes in jail because they're kind of acting reckless. And I always tell people, it's like, yo, if we have superpowers, you think we're going to be like Superman and all of these crazy? No, it's like people are going to be doing shit that is like that definition of vigilante. Yeah, that's exactly what people are going to be doing in real life. So I love that aspect of it. How'd you, or what made you go that route instead of just focusing on a specific hero?
Yeah, you know, I just enjoy, you know, the kick-ass vibe of the reality of, what would really happen, you know, if people tried to do the right thing, but they don't got superpowers. A lot of them don't have the training, but they want to get out there. They want to help. The reality is it would be a shit show, I think, for everybody. You know, it gets very dangerous, you know, like, you know, if you see someone committing a crime, they're probably willing to risk more than you are. And so to thrust yourself into that position, you know, what would happen? And I'm just a fan of, the boys' style of just mature humor. And again, they have superpowers, but it's still like the reality of it, right? Like these people who are put in these positions of power, they probably wouldn't all be, you know, Boy Scouts about it. And so, the kick ass, the boys. Yeah, that's perfect, man. That's exactly what I'm going for.
Kick ass is another one. That was one of my first, like, super thick graphic novels that I purchased. That I purchased on my own that was, like, at that level. I have my uncles and shit smuggle Spawn in the house without my mom knowing and shit. But, man, so we'll take, like, a deep dive. But I want to introduce you. All right, YouTube, what is goody? We're on another episode, and we have Chris. Is it Wagon or Wagon?
Wygand. Yeah, it's a weird Wygand. One. Someone butchered our German name way back when. No, it's a weird one.
All right, well, so if somebody else butchers it, I'm definitely going to butcher it. But we have Chris Wygand. He is the creator of Tights, which is on Lesser Known Comics. The level of writing is up there. I have two projects that have high level like writing to where I'm reading it and I feel like it's a TV show more than a comic, and that is Luna with Concrete Comics and yours, man. So I got to give it to you.
Wow.
Not that saying that either way is like bad or good, but that shows like the level of writing that you had. Even when I was looking at reading the Black Trainer, I found myself reading it in a black voice and it fit with the words. But now my question to you, do you have a writing background, like a higher level writing background? Like, you know, how'd you get into that?
So, you know, my day job for most of my professional career has been in advertising. And so, and I got into advertising because I always wanted to get into entertainment writing, whether that's, you know, TV, movies, comics, you know, grew up just, I've been reading, collecting comics most of my life. I just wanted to get into a profession that I could start a career with and then maybe meet the right people. And, you know, it's kind of gone in a really positive direction. You know, I've written, you know, my day job was really fun. I've been very lucky, man. Like, you know, my day job was to write car commercials. I'm from Detroit area originally. And then 11 years ago, I came out to San Francisco where I, you know, on the agency side, I'm writing commercials for Electronic Arts and then, you know, Levi's, but then I go to work for Ubisoft. And so I get into this gaming world and I love video games. And so, you know, to my day job to write scripts and trailers for games that I love was incredible, but it helped me. Right. And I think that really translated well to comics where, man, you got to be succinct, right? You know, in film, you have the luxury of, you know, in a script describing, you know, you could just watch it, you know, see a sunset and that could say so much of, you know, just a silhouette of someone's face, right? Like you don't have that luxury. You got to tell that story as quickly as you possibly can in a panel on a page, right? Maybe six panels on a page, you know, seven if you're lucky. And so I think that helped translate it. So, yeah, I've been writing. It's not your traditional kind of, you know, I haven't been an author you know, my whole life or anything like that. But I've been trying to go that direction. And so, yeah, that's very nice of you to say.
But you could have fucking lied to you. You could have said, oh, yeah, I wrote for Steven Spielberg. Like, oh, yeah, Christopher Nolan. Yeah, I told him everything he knows. And I would have fucking believed you because I'm like, yo, the writing in this is fucking top tier, bro. Even the first scene. And I didn't get it at first, but like you can, like, obviously you have the person that's being the narrator and then you have all of this stuff happening. So you have the person that's being the narrator. He's also kind of telling like a little bit of sly jokes, like pretty much how somebody would talk to themselves, their inner dialogue. But then you also have the characters that are in these scenes that are also being funny, if that makes sense, like when the bank robber goes up to the teller and then the granny smacks him over the head with the O2 canister. I wasn't expecting that. And I was like, oh shit, like this is the vibe that I'm getting from here. And then you have like this weird dude from freaking Die Hard who just comes in, and then he's like, you think he's gonna be like some sort of hero, but then I'm gonna spoil it for everybody. I mean, everybody's gonna freaking read it anyway. But then he claps a freaking hostage right in the head. That's one of my freaking fears. Like, I have friends who are like pro gun, and they're like, "You need to protect your family and shit." And I'm just thinking, bro, I know I'm gonna like get into a situation, and I'm gonna end up like shooting my wife in the head, or like shooting somebody innocent, and I'm gonna go right to jail and then get raped for the rest of my life. And like, that's one of the things. And it's like, yo, I don't understand why people think they could be like superheroes and like have marksman aim, but like this is the topics that are in the comic. It's like, yo, these superheroes, you know, not everybody is like built for it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I wanted to open with something that would grab your attention and show the ridiculousness of people, you know, who don't have the skill set trying to be superheroes. This guy, he doesn't have an imagination. He just dresses as John McClane. He goes in there with real guns. Yeah. He starts, you know, he brought a bad situation of bad bank robbers screwing things up to a much more dangerous, worse position by trying to help. And yeah, he does the, you know, the tape gun to the back, and it just goes horribly wrong, right? Into a poor granny, granny's head. And so I think that was for me, it was like, okay, set the world, right? It's like, holy shit, people are trying to be superheroes and it's going wrong. And then you see that guy in the courtroom of the protagonist, Oliver Andrews. And so I think, you know, that was like, oh, that's why this guy hates these people. And then you know, hopefully it's interesting. It's like, okay, well, I just thought it was interesting to have the protagonist not be a superhero, but be on the opposite side. He's almost an antagonist at the beginning. Because again, like, he throws the book at tights when he has any chance. You know, they're kind of everything that he kind of hates. Like, you know, the guy's a flawed character, the main character, but he's true to his wife and he's true to the law. And if you mess with either of those, you're going to have a bad time. And so, of course, he gets sucked into their world, and you'll see an evolution of sorts of, you know, him hating them, him hating his situation that he's in. But, you know, there's an arc of maybe him becoming a superhero himself.
I figured that was the route that you were going to go, but I wasn't sure. And I knew that wasn't going to be something that was going to be answered in like the first couple of issues.
Yeah.
I was like, you can't rush magic like that. It's like, it's got to be like issue 20 to where it's like, he's like, all right, you know what? I want to throw on a cape now or do some shit. Now, you took the perspective of this main character who's a judge. Do you have a law background?
No. So
wondering, like, how do you write perspective from industries that you're not familiar with? Like, are you just watching like Law and Order and just like writing down like notes and shit?
I've doing research for the courtroom scene and how they talk, right? You know, how, you know, at the end of you know, the John McClane, the fat John McClane, when they're giving him a sentence, just like those details, I'm like, I want to get those right. I just want to make it up and have it sound right. So, dude, just doing your due diligence and doing a lot of that, what you just said, honestly. And then I got a buddy, Chris. I grew up with him, and he's out in Philadelphia. He's a fantastic lawyer, and he's been my guy. So what I'll do is I'll write a scene. I'll hopefully get close doing my, I've been looking into, you know, how the people speak, and hopefully I get it right. And then I send it to him, and he always has a perspective, or he always throws some knowledge at me that I'm seeking, that makes it as true to real life as I can. Of course, you know, it's a work of fiction and I'm pushing some boundaries, but He's been a tremendous help. So yeah, you know, I, it is not something that comes natural. The guy isn't in advertising, you know, and this is happening to him. But again, I really liked that perspective of someone on the side of the law, right? Yeah. And how they would perceive what's going on and what would happen if then they would have to break the law themselves to survive, you know, the situation.
Yeah, I always think that's a strong theme when you have somebody who's so straight in line with the law and order, and being a law-abiding citizen, but then you get put in a position or a situation to where you have to break the law, and it's like a life or death situation. And yeah. I always love those perspectives. That's why I like Jim Gordon, because he allows Batman to just run around in the city, and it's like, yo, this is kind of illegal, but at the same time, exactly. It's like, yo, he's getting a lot of people off the streets, or one could say he's getting more people on the streets, but whatever. But yeah, I like that perspective. I like it. Now, so many different things. All right, so we talked about the dialogue. We talked about mm-hmm. the main character. As far as the story goes and then planting it with lesser-known comics, how did that relationship come about?
I'm so lucky. So the first two Kickstarter – well, after the first Kickstarter – I started seeing lesser known comics, and the artists who were the creators that were working with Mark and lesser known comics. And those are the stuff that I was digging the most, that I saw crowdfunding, the people I was actually reaching out to, because I didn't know a damn thing. About making comics and then about launching comic, you know, to self publishing comics. And so
did you have this? I found a lot before you went to lesser known.
What's up?
Did you have this first? Like, did you have it created before you went to lesser known comics or after?
Oh, yeah. No, it was before. So, this whole thing came together during right when COVID started and right when I went on paternity leave. Basically, I had a rough idea of what this story was going to be. It was under a different name, but I had a direction. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to commit to this. I'm making this or I'll never forgive myself. I got nowhere to go because I have this kid in COVID and I got to make this. It's just, I got to make a comic. And then, so I wrote the script. I found the artist, Edison Neo, who's fantastic. Got very lucky with building this very small team. And then I made the first issue, or I got real close before I launched the Kickstarter. By the end of the Kickstarter, it was done. That was out the door before I started, working or reaching out really to Mark in lesser known comics. And so, yeah, that was done. But then I saw these comics with that logo on it. And some of the creators that I had been talking to started talking to them. And so then, it was just me reaching out to Mark and asking him questions about crowdfunding, what he's doing, just saying, I'm loving what he was doing. And then coincidentally, he was also just seeing who was following him on social media. We had a lot of connections that were the same. And he said, hey, man, I've been checking out Tights. I'm like, so then we just started talking and it just felt right. So, super lucky to be working with them. It's just such an awesome community crew of humans doing this indie comics thing.
Nice. Yeah, everybody has like their uniqueness, not only about their project, but about like themselves. And it's so cool that Mark can attract, or you guys attract yourselves to them, whatever the universe says it is. And it's like you guys come together. And then all of the projects are like slappers, man. It's like they're all like unique. I could see them on Saturday morning cartoons or as like TV shows. And it's just like nuts, man. I freaking love that about you guys.
Yeah, no, I've seen the lineup. Like, yeah, I love seeing so many people as part of the crew talking to you and getting their stuff out there. But Mark's done a phenomenal job of just picking the right, not only like books because of how diverse they are from each other, because the catalog is pretty diverse in a great way. Kind of anything you might be into, I think you're gonna be able to find one or two different types of comics. But also the creators themselves are so alike. In that, you know, when we jump on a call every 2 weeks, it's just fun, man. It's just everyone. It's just like hanging out, right? It's just talking with your buddies, talking about your books, who's launching when, how could everyone help each other out? It's been everything that I had hoped that it would be. And I'm very happy that this third Kickstarter is going to be, you know, in full kind of partnership with that crew.
Nice. Do you see... So you did the first Kickstarter by yourself. You did the second one with Lesser Known. Do you see a difference between the success and the Kickstarters?
So actually, the second one I did by myself too. We were beginning to talk, technically, what's gone on is, I work with my artists, and they help build a book, and then what I've done is I've handled the kind of like the social stuff and the crowdfunding Kickstarter stuff. So that's been pretty much me when it comes to launching and maintaining it solo for the first two. And then this third one, will be the first time really that we're all working together.
Nice. How do you choose an artist?
Man, I had my script for issue one. And yeah, then it was like that daunting task of, okay, well, I can't, a comic book is nothing without a good artist. Started getting on social, man. And I went on Reddit. I saw this guy's work, and it was for his creator owned book called Snake Claws. And it was a combination of, it was like a love letter to old Kung Fu movies. And so it was a bunch of action and it was comedy. And it was just such a perfect marriage visually. And I'm like, man, this guy just gets it too. He's a great storyteller, but he's also a phenomenal artist. I'm like, this is it. Like, this is the type of art so this style, this was his cover that he did for the second one. And so I emailed him. I went to his website and I emailed him. And I'm like, hey, man, you probably get this all the time. But here's a script. I'd love to work together. And I got really lucky because he responded, said he was into it. And I found out on a podcast much later, he was actually on it with me. And he was like, the person hosting was like, so why tights? How did that come about? It's like, well, Chris sent me a script and I understood it. And I liked it. So anyone out there, because a lot of these artists get inundated. They're like with these ideas, these big ideas, right? It's like, no one's made anything yet. It's just like, come with me. Here's the idea. And these people, a lot of times they're working on a bunch of projects. They're professionals. They just don't got time, to figure that out, So yeah, I implore anyone who's thinking about this, get it done. Write your script, at least for that first issue, know where you're going with it before you approach an artist, because they want to read it. They want to understand it. They want to see it before they're going to commit a minute, of their time. And so that was it, man. I was one for one. I couldn't believe
it. I do the same thing. It's like I'm writing my project and I'm like, y'all don't even want to look at an artist. I don't even want to, like, I just want to like write it, get it, like that first issue, first two issues done, and then I want to start looking for an artist, because I don't want to, first off, it's already like, oh, I'm taking me back to middle school where it's like I'm asking a girl out for like a date or to the movie or some shit like that. It's like, yo, I'm not trying to get played here. So automatic, like, that anxiety is already building up. And then, I totally get it. I totally get it. But that's good advice. It's like, yo, like, and I know Mark has mentioned that. It's like, you want to surround yourself with people that get shit done. Don't just have the theory. It's like, put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, whatever you is, and then just start creating.
Yep. And pros, there's a lot. Listen, making a comic is expensive. It's a risk. But, I most people I talk to, they're not in it to make like money. It's just, you got an idea, you got to get it out there, right? And of course, you don't want to lose money on anything. But that, for that first comic book, especially, you're trusting in yourself. And, it's worth, because there's a scale. I mean, you can find artists that will do it for next to nothing, because they want to get out there too. And not saying there's fantastic artists who also don't cost that much, but just really look for the style and the art that you want to represent your book. Of course, if you can afford it, right? Don't go broke doing this thing. But I'm telling you, when you find the right people, right? And you can get that feeling when you have that dialogue with them. I think the right fit is, that's the way to do it, because it's an intimate relationship, man. On this third book, shit, we have, including myself, six people now, and it's a machine. And if there's a cog in that machine that is just not working, everything stops. And again, I'm so lucky to have built the team that I have and just how well everyone works together. But yeah, find the right people and find the right people who are going to represent your book the way that you want it to be represented.
Cool. So many fucking questions. All right. So you mentioned team. Yeah. And I also want to talk about like marketing aspect. So we'll go to team first. So you have a team of six. How does this team get put together? You know, I interview creators. I'm cool with creators that are one-man teams. And they have like a five-issue manga with like 50 pages each. And I'm like, this is fucking insane. And it's like good. Like one of the guys that I got to shout out, Golden Mist, he does everything on his own. Pandio, right? Moonlayer, he pretty much does everything on his own. But then like for me, I can't do that. I know I can't do that, right? So how do you put together a team?
I know. I wish. It's crazy. These talents who can do everything, that's a different level of talent that I'm very envious of. So yeah, you got to find the people who are really good at all that stuff. Now, okay. So for the first issue, it was Edison Neo out of Singapore that I found. He did everything. I knew this guy was going to blow up. And so I was like, man, I just want him for a couple issues. Now he's with IDW. He's got an 8-issue thing. He just did a cover with Ninja Turtles. So he's blowing up. So I'm like, I am so very lucky. This guy is doing sketches, pencils, inks, colors. And then he's like, hey, I'm a little busy. So for lettering, I actually know this guy, Reed Hinckley Barnes. He's like, it was so funny. He's in Singapore telling me, he's like, I got this letter. He's really good. I worked with him. I think he's in California. Turns out Reed lives 7 blocks away from me in San Francisco. Coincidentally, this guy in Singapore connects me with a dude who lives right down the street.
If you're in California, there's like 3 cities and you're like, you're in the top 2. So of course it's going to be like right there, San Francisco. I mean,
Yeah. So that was that team. That was the 3 of us. And then for the second issue, Edison's getting busier and busier. And he's got anthologies going and stuff. And so he's like, all right, I can do the sketches, the pencils, the inks, get someone for color. So then I got Maya Opicic, who her is I put the call out, you know, on my social channels. I made a post. I'm like calling all colorists, you know, if you're colorist, and you're looking for work, here's tights here, you know, I'll send you the first issue. We'd love to, you know, bring you aboard if you're interested. We're, you know, taking, you know, applications, entries, however you want to call it. And I found her work and she was like at the top of my list. And then like 2 other people were like, you should check out Maya. And then I was so lucky when I reached out to her, she's like, yes. So we brought her aboard. And then on this third issue,
you're scooping up the team of Avengers for freaking making.
I know, man. It's crazy. So this third issue, Edison's too busy. He's blown up. He's doing his IDW thing. But I'm so very lucky that I had an artist, Kyle Petchak, who did a variant cover for issue 2. And I just love his style and marries really well with like kind of what we have. It's obviously his own thing, but you're not going to be like, what is this? You know, it's still very much in that world. He does action so well. And it, you can have the very serious stuff of someone getting blasted, you know, on the page, but also have a smile kind of, it's kind of hard balance there. So he was perfect. And again, so lucky that he was like, yes, I can take on a full freaking issue of 24 pages. And so he stepped in for the sketching pencils. I got, then I had to find an inker. And so then, you know, again, it was the call to get it out there. It's like, all right, well, who's a good inker that I can, you know, reach out to? And it was the same thing. I made a post and then people said, hey, Matt Seaborn, he's the man and he's awesome. So I brought Matt aboard. So it's Kyle, Matt, Maya. Maya has a person who does the flats, then myself. And then there's now, you know, we have 3 covers. So Edison's doing a cover. And then I got another guy, Samuel Owunzi, who's amazing. Out of Nigeria, who's doing a cover for me again. But it's all reaching out. Long story short, it's you see something, you dig, just ask them. Don't be afraid, right? Just reach out to them, you know, message them on whatever social platform that they're involved in. And, you know, they're going to say yes or no, but you won't know until you ask. And I've been very lucky that, you know, I've gotten yeses from some of my top picks relatively quickly.
And it's a little bit of leverage in networking, because it also sounds like people are like, all right, cool, I do this, and I got a guy for the lettering. So, like, you know, we could offset that a little bit. In totality, and you don't have to give me, like, the exacts of your project. I'm also not the IRS, so whatever. But, like, how much price range does it cost to actually make a project like yours?
Let's see. Where would I be at? That sounds a good question. I mean, it's thousands, right? Trying to see if I find.
I mean, thousands could be 3,000s or 9,000s.
Yeah, it's you know, it could be the range that I've seen for, you know, sketches, pencils from, you know, great artists, 100 to 175 per page. For inks, it could be anywhere between, you know, $30 and $70. Colors, you know, I've seen $40, $75 or more. Lettering, you know, $5 to $20. That's per page, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, when you're adding that up, yeah, I mean, that's north of, you know, you can get north of 5,000 pretty quickly when you have a page, you know, a page count that's 24, 28. My first issue was 32 or something. But man, yeah, it's an investment. It gets kind of crazy when you actually, like, see. And then, you know, it's everything else too. When you're putting your Kickstarter together, it's, shoot, well, I got to figure out, you know, how I don't just lose money by getting the book out there, because you don't want to make things too expensive. You want to come out and get people excited and be like, oh man, this is pretty cheap. But also, again, build enough capital to keep it going. And I've been lucky in that with the first two Kickstarters to not lose money. Haven't really made all that much, but the hope is to keep it going, maybe get some distributors interested. And then it's like, okay, it's been worth the grind.
Yeah, I mean, you only need to get in agreeing on what you spent one time, and then everything after that is gravy. I mean, obviously digital wise, but you know, books cost whatever they cost to print out. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So let's talk about marketing aspect, because you have a marketing background. I also have a marketing background. I work for a digital marketing firm, so I get, like, the ins and outs. Nothing on the level of, like, EA games or shit like that. Like, we're working with, like, ranking companies. But how do you leverage your marketing background? Or are you leveraging your marketing background for this?
Yeah, I think it's really helped. So, working for social media the last 6 years. So I went from more traditional marketing to, like, okay, new Assassin's Creed's coming out, write a trailer for it, or write this commercial, come up with that thing you see on television, you know, focusing more on that in that world. But then for the last 6 years, like, okay, well, what works now that, you know, we're all on these things, man. When a commercial comes on, good or bad, trust me, I love telling stories in 30 seconds to a minute, but we just have to, I had to just come to the reality. It's like, I got to learn this thing. I got to learn mobile marketing. And so that has helped tremendously. Mobile marketing, the world of social, knowing when you put a video out in the world, what is really, like, what can you do to grab attention immediately and then reward the person for sticking around? Right.
Yes. This is how my favorite topic right here.
Yeah. How do you build a social following for something that's never existed? That was the biggest thing for me, is making Tights Comic Book, you know, at Tights Comic Book, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, throwing stuff on Reddit, you know, building it. I wanted to get to, what was I? I think 1,000 followers in the month prior, I really launched my first my social presence, I think a month before, or 2 months before, or maybe 2 months before, my first Kickstarter. And my goal was, I just want 1,000 real people following me. It's real easy to pay for some fake stuff, and that doesn't help, particularly in our world, man. People feel that shit out. They know it's, it just looks bad. You don't want that.
It does not. It actually hurts you.
It does.
Really, I know, does. A couple of marketing companies that were paying for, like, followers and shit like that. That shit does not help you at all. So if you're listening to this shit, do not pay for followers.
No, do it. But you know what you can do? And I think this is the most important thing that I did to build my presence. It wasn't paying for ads, although you can, and that does help. I can get to that in a second. But it is building a social following of people who really give a shit about what you're putting out there, because those are the people who are actually going to buy your thing, right? And so what I try to do and what I continue to do is I look for accounts that I'm into. You know, it's, you know, of course you follow like the big artists out there, you know, who are working for Image and the Big Two and, you know, writers and stuff like that. But where you can get traction, actually learn stuff and have them follow you back and open a connection where you build those relationships that you lean on later, are people who, you know, go on Kickstarter, go on Indiegogo, whatever, the stuff that you're into, find out who's making that, because typically they've done one or two issues before, or this is their 10th book, whatever. See what they're doing on social. Start following them. Like their stuff that you like. Don't farm and just like everything. And like, you know, just do what you feel is natural. Find those accounts you find natural that you will learn by looking at, and also reaching out to them. That's, I mean, I just started following a bunch of indie comics. And I'm like, damn, this stuff is awesome. This is where I want to be. And then when I had a question, I'd reach out and ask them, like, shit, like, it looks like you're launching your first book, but you're a month ahead of me. Like, you know, what are you doing for your rewards? I'm struggling to come up with, you know, and that big tier, like, you know, a sticker pack, a bookmark, who are you using? Who made the pin I saw you, you know, you just made a pin for your Kickstarter. It's just, again, opening those connections and those dialogues, and you'll be so surprised at how receptive people are in this community. It has been so healthy, man. Like, for the most part, people want to help you. And so you're following the things you want to follow. You're liking the stuff you want to like. A lot of times, if you're liking their stuff, they'll follow you. And it's just building that organic community the right way. And so you get the right people following you, and you start talking to the right people. That's what I did. And that's what I try to do. And, you know, it can seem tiring, man. Sometimes I'm like, I want to build this community. So I would sit there and, you know, it's fun, right? Oh my God, it could be so terrible. I was watching TV and going through a bunch of stuff I like to look at. But, you know, putting in that work early to build your book, you know, presence from scratch, you just got to do it. And that has been the most powerful place to get people to care about the book, and then to ultimately to get strangers to click on a Kickstarter link to purchase it, right? It's the people who follow you. And also, so you start building it that way, but you also have to reward your followers consistent stuff, right? Like, I have a template where the color scheme's the same. I got my logo up top. It's not, hopefully not too obnoxious, but hopefully at a glance, it's like, oh, Tights just did something, right? And it's particularly when your Kickstarter, I'd say 2 weeks out from it, through your Kickstarter, you got to be putting stuff out there almost daily. And that is a grind. But you got to make sure that they can't miss it, right? Like, when you are live and you want people to check it out, you got to make stuff and you got to put it out there. So build your following and then make the content and make it consistent, both visually and then also consistent is when you're releasing it. Right? Almost daily, particularly when, you know, you're doing your thing with your crowdfunding.
There you go. There you go. So, and everybody listening to this is coming from the perspective of, you know, we can label him as like an executive in marketing. Like you heard, he works for a marketing company that does full commercials for like EA Sports. I mean, EA Games. That's like a pretty big deal in the marketing world. But what is he telling you? You're telling us is that, hey, you got to kind of like dumb it down a little bit and figure out how you can connect with people on social media on a more personal level, which isn't like so grand as far as like the video editing and like the budget in your video content. It's like, no, sometimes it's like just being super authentic and posting daily and then just catching your viewers and building up that following.
Yeah. And talking about, so I'm a copywriter by trade. I can work in some editing programs a little bit, Photoshop, I'm all right. But what I've used is Keynote. So that's the PowerPoint that comes with your Mac, right? Like that's the Apple version.
Wait, and what are you using Keynote for?
To make everything you see on Tights comic book is on a Keynote template. I got a 4x5 and I got a 9x16. And what I do is I copy and paste. And what I love about Keynote, because I used to work in InDesign, but you have to link everything you put in InDesign. It's a pain in the ass, man. Keynote's great is you click and drag anything into it. You don't need folders that link to it. It's there. And so what I do, oh, there's my daughter.
They kind of made it almost like Canva a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's pretty phenomenal. So what I do is it's really easy for static content, but even for my video, what I do is I use the transitional elements that you can do, and then I make it a self-presenting movie.
Okay.
And so then I drag that into Photoshop and I add music to it. And then I export it, and then boom, I have a piece of video content that can be a reel, or, you know, it can be in TikTok or whatever, all made in Keynote, which is ridiculous, but it's fast. It's fast.
Super it's difficult. Really fast. I got to put together like a fucking like masterclass to like show you guys like how simple it is to freaking make like simple video content, but for like social media. You'd be surprised how fucking like it's simple. You can get like complex a little bit, but what I see is like the more complex you get necessarily isn't good, or the more flashy, or it's like a lot of times it's like you said in the beginning, it's like stopping people in their tracks to get them to take time out of their day to watch your video, because people are scrolling fast. I fucking get it. It's like even with my company, like sometimes we have account managers that are running profiles that get like no views, and then I look at the videos. And, like, I make videos, like, for myself. I don't do it for my company. So I'm thinking in my head, all right, they should have did this. Or, you know, this lost my attention, and I'm purposely watching this video. So it's all about, like, that first, like, 0 to 3 seconds. It's really at, like,
you know it. That's right.
Yeah, 0 seconds. Right. Like, can you put something on the screen? So, like, normally my content will have, like, it'll have something that's so like fucking outlandish, like whether it's like the title or something that I'm saying that automatically stops someone, or image. And then from that 0 to 3 seconds, I always try to edit my video. So I'm saying something so outlandish that like somebody is going to like stop. Like when I edit this, I don't know, I'm going to figure out something that's like super crazy, because I'm always trying to get people to get the most value out of the guests that I sit down with. And sometimes like, videos don't hit, and that's, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, I always want to help you guys and get the most attention that you guys could possibly get. So it's like, I got to be on top of my fucking game too.
No, you got it. Your videos attracted my attention because you're doing it right, man. Like you said it right. 0 to 3 seconds. That's what I was preaching to when I worked, you know, in social media, going in front of all that. I was in gaming. So, you know, go to a room in front of the Sony people. It's that I had the slide. The first 3 seconds, they don't even matter. They're paramount, right? And then I do a little click down, because every time we do a study, it's 2 seconds, 1 second, 10 milliseconds, whatever. You get it. Immediately get their attention. That's why in our world, static still works well. I know a lot of things are video, and I think that's also, it's important to have a healthy mix of static and video assets, because some people are just sick. I mean, it's almost as if something's not moving at this point, you might grab someone's attention more because it's a static image, particularly when it's art. Like if you're showing off something art, like I'm doing a reveal of the cover art that Kyle did for our first cover.
Yeah.
And I got 3 videos right now showing from sketches. That's another thing in our world. Progression videos, people love that stuff, or how you create things. I'm not the artist. What I do is I take the sketch, and then a second later, right over it, it morphs into the pencils, and it morphs into the inks, then the colors, then the lettering. So we're doing that for, I do that for a lot of the pages. Those typically perform well. And then I'm doing this for the cover, but when the cover, do the full reveal, sure, I'll do a video, but then I'm also going to do a static, because again, people are just, they dig different things. And I think, that's a good point to put out there. But back to what you're saying, your branding, you do a great job with that. Make sure people think of it as like, think of mobile almost as you're going 80 miles an hour down the highway, right? You glance up at an auto home, like a big billboard. If they're doing their job right, if McDonald's is doing their job right, the color scheme that you see at a glance. You might not read what they're saying, but there's that impression. You saw those arches, you saw that red, and it did its job, right? And most people aren't going to see your stuff, but if you just keep with that consistency, then it's kind of ingrained in their brain, and they, you know, and if they finally see something that they like, the next time they just see that look, they're like, oh shit, I remember that tights thing. Oh, that's pretty cool. And then you've won, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I try and I guess preach, that yeah, consistency is pretty good.
Here's the mistake that I've made though. I've made the mistake of looking at people who already have established followings and thinking I need to do what they're doing now in order to get those same results, which is almost like a false flag or a facade or whatever, because they already have the following. So they could just post up a fucking leaf that they found in the fucking forest and post up, and they're going to get like 1,000 likes. Whereas like, I can't do that shit. It's like you have to, and I've tried to find like the profiles that are like so brand new, like brand new in a certain time frame, but they're exploding. And a lot of times it's like you said, it's the ones that have like that 0 to 3 seconds, that like punchline, that like shit that hits you in the face, that shit that makes you stop in your tracks. That's how you grow the following. And it also depends on the platform. I'm about to hit 10,000 followers on Facebook, which I'm fucking hyped about.
Instagram, yeah, that's a lot.
I don't know what's going on with Instagram's algorithms, but it's whatever. That's like my core following. But then I have, my Facebook, which is at about to be at 10K. I have TikTok, which is at 4K. Nice. YouTube is a fucking slow grind. I'm still trying to figure out that beast, but I'm trying to build out all of these platforms. So when I decide to market whatever I want to market, I've already got the fan base and the following and the infrastructure and the foundation laid out. And I think that shit is super important.
Yeah, no, you got it, man. Again, you're doing so much right. I think just keep going with your gut. Yeah, so yeah, I mean you're already killing it, dude.
Yeah, and I started this shit just like you in like during COVID. Like I was not doing this shit before COVID. When COVID hit, it sounds like everybody had their free time. You were in Cali, I was in New York, so it was like those were like the two fucking places that were completely shut down. So you had nothing but time. Now, how did you? Or so obviously you started it during COVID. Now COVID's done. We're working, family life, and everything. How do you balance all of that work?
It's oh man, I got a 3-year-old now. You know, you have your day job. It's luckily it's fun, right? It's not something that I have to do to put food on a table, that, you know, a night job that I hate. So it's a labor of love, and you look forward to it. And when it's all coming together, it's just such like a cool, like almost, I know it's cliche, magical thing, man. Like after you, the first time you get a comic book that you made and you're holding it, I mean, it's pretty nuts. And then it's almost like a drug. It's like, yeah, I want to get there again. So it's just a lot of extra work. Right. And I'm lucky that, you know, I've worked from home and I just need to be doing different things all day. And so taking a healthy, like, mental break from my work just for 30 minutes to write something for the comic or do something, you know, make a post that I'm going to release the next day at 9 a.m. because I know that's a good time for Instagram and people on the West Coast are getting to work and people on the East Coast are starting their lunch thing. It's all building and then releasing later, right? So, you know, whether that's half an hour during the day and then at night I finish it, or the weekends or whatever, you know, it's just like anything, you know, it's just, you know, outside of your normal life, you just find time for it. And luckily it's not been like, it's not breaking me. I only have one, you know, I only got one book. I mean, I know some people who are doing like 3 different things outside of their day job and they have 2 kids. And so I don't know how the hell they do that. but sometimes it's difficult, but most of the time, I mean, you're doing something that's fun.
Nice, nice. You have 1 3-year-old.
Yeah.
All right, nice. I got a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old.
Oh, wow. Man, you're in the thick of that then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who me and my wife let us, like, convince us to have 2 kids under 2. but it is the most craziest thing ever. Like, you play video games, so it's like, you know, when you have like a specific item or you have something where your EXP like quadruples, that's how your parenting skills quadruple. When you have when you go from one kid, but then two kids under two, you, that's like equivalent to having like five kids that are like spread out. It's fucking nuts. But
I don't know. I don't know how you guys do it. I honestly don't know how you do it.
I have no idea. Well, I literally had to. So like, I got off of work. I had to obviously like be with my kids and my wife, and then I had to cook while my wife ran to the store. And then, like, we just chilled a little bit and then put the kids to bed. And, like, I always do, like, that rushing act before I hop on at 7:30 when I sit down with someone. And it's just, like, nuts. And then after this, what the fuck am I going to do? Me and wife are going to watch TV, and I'm going to be fucking editing or being writing. Most of the time, it's editing.
Yeah, you know, man.
It's a fucking grind. But, you know, everybody has their end goal in mind, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the fucking motivation. So, you're in. So, you moved from Detroit, and we're gonna get into, like, you know, a little bit of like your personal life, not like too personal, but you moved from Detroit to San Francisco. Did that like move, or I don't know what age you moved from, but did that move kind of make you in the mindset of, hey, I want to do something on my own, or I want to, you know, create something for myself? Going to, you know, San Francisco, that's like a huge city where a lot of motivation business owners moved to.
Yeah. I, you know, at first it was, for another ad job. So it was it was the dream at that point of writing, you know, commercials for, at that point I was on the agency side. So for Electronic Arts was our client, and Levi's. So those are my two biggest ones. And those are some pretty heavy hitters. And again, I love gaming. And so it was like the glitz and, well, before I started working, because it's a grind, advertising is such a grind, but like the glamour of, you know, these high profile clients. And it was fun. I mean, I'm very lucky to do what I've done in my career. So it was mostly that. But, you know, honestly, I've always wanted to do my own thing. And I've always on the side, you know, here's a pilot idea. And then, oh, here's an idea for, you know, a script for a movie. And I'm never just finishing anything. I'm, you know, like a dog chasing different cars. And then also, when I was doing the ad copywriter thing, I would be so drained. My day job was to write, you know, and to, again, it's fun writing, but, you know, it's a job. And, you know, you're going through different layers internally of creative directors, executive creative directors, and the client get their hands on it. And, you know, it just becomes a different thing by the end of it. Yep. And the hours are crazy. And so by the time I get home, I'm like, I don't have the space to do anything, right? Like, you know, I just want to do something completely different than writing. And so when this really came together is when I became more of like a social creative consultant in video games. So my day job was less of write this script for this game. It was work with these teams who are doing that. And, you know, they're going to bring their campaign on a social, and it's like, well, how do we do that? And, you know, my goal was to disconnect myself from owning the piece of creative to helping them make the best stuff possible. And that was the healthiest thing I think I've ever done. It wasn't as fun, it wasn't as cool, but it was just cool to help other people make great content for mobile. And when I did that, it also, I had time. Because my job, I wasn't working till 3 o'clock in the morning for every day for a week to get new business for the agency. You know, it was a 9 to 5 typically. And, you know, allowing me to get home, work normal hours, and then write what I want to write. And I'm not burnt out writing all day. I'm just helping other people, course correcting. Sometimes I'd write, sometimes a client would be like, hey, come up with something. And that's fun. But it was no longer like, damn, I don't have the time for this. I want to do this, but I just can't. To, all right, like, I got to do something. So yeah, that was the biggest difference. Getting the time back from my day job,
I like that.
Allowed me to kind of, you know, focus on my own personal stuff.
And that's only like if you're like serious about doing something on your own. Like, I'm never going to recommend somebody change their situation, but even for myself, it's like, yo, I don't want something that is going to mentally drain me by the end of the day, where I don't have the energy to do the shit that I know is going to be fruitful later on down the road. for my family. It's like, yo, I want to be at, you know, somewhere tip top shape afterwards.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's cool. What city do you like better?
I mean, San Francisco's fun. It's so different and it's also kind of changing for the worse, I would say. But we're now out. I mean, we're still in we're still in San Francisco, but we're in more of like a family area. So that was really nice, kind of getting out of the craziness in the middle of the city, you know, with a kid. So it's, I mean, I'm a 15-minute walk to Golden Gate Park or to a beach when it's nice enough to go to a beach. I don't know, Detroit, what's crazy is since I've left, of course, it's had its kind of a renaissance. And when I go back, it's surprising the hell out of me. Like,
really?
The downtown is now what I always wanted it. My wife and I, that's where we met at Michigan State, and she grew up there for most of her life. It's becoming the city that, you know, we always wanted to be part of. And so, you know, I'm never one to say I've never moved back. Who knows, man? They're so different. So, yeah, it's hard to gauge just because I haven't been able to live that new city life in Detroit that I've like seen when I go back to visit for like a week at a time. We're going back next month, so I'll check back with you. But yeah, it's looking really promising. So we'll see.
That's cool. How is it being on the West Coast, but then having, I guess, like the hub of lesser known comics on the East Coast? Is there like a difficulty there, or is just like, oh, everything's done through the internet?
Yeah, that, man, it's just crazy what we can do now and what we're used to doing. You know, like the whole work from home took like people saying, you want to get on a Zoom? Like, no, I don't think I have that downloaded to. That's just how business is done. And I think it's been really good for working in indie comics, because, you know, Edison, we didn't even Zoom, just knowing he's in Singapore and like we're on opposite sides of like the world, just being able to handle, we almost handled everything through direct, you know, DMs on Instagram and just emails. That's it. And just knowing everyone's schedule, hitting them when you know that they're awake. And also when you got to Zoom, like I Zoomed with Kyle, the artist on issue three, where it's like, we start issue three with this kind of heady like comparison of a white lotus growing, and then also like the main bad guy, like we see where he came from, and he kind of like, we understand like how he grew into who he is, and I'm like, we just need to talk through this. And he's on the East Coast, and so no, I think it's good, man. I mean, you know, it's not that crazy, you know, particularly when you're working with people who are, you know, at least stateside. 3-hour difference, you can find a time. And with, you know, the tools that we're all now pros at, you can make it happen relatively painlessly.
I like it. All right, one more question, and then we'll cut out of here for the YouTube crew, and then we'll probably stay for like 15-20 minutes for Patreon.
Cool.
Is there any competition between lesser known comics? Like, do we feel the burn? It's like, who sells more? Who's got the better story? What do we got?
No, you know, again, people probably won't believe me. I have not felt that. And I'm a very competitive person. Okay. And I think, you know, that's why I liked advertising, because, you know, you're in a team of two, copywriter, art director, and you are in competition to sell your idea against the people you work with, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like this healthy competition. And I enjoyed that about it. But really, when it comes to lesser known, no, because I think everyone is doing something kind of so different. And they have their styles so different. We're almost like, we're pushed to be better. I mean, that's the way I feel. It's like every time we share new art or new ideas on the thread that we got going on, you know, Instagram, Messenger, or whatever, or when we get on calls. Fun. Daughter saying hello. It just kind of pushes you. Honestly, who knows? Maybe that darkness will creep back up in me after I see something that is maybe closer to what I'm doing. But I swear, right now, it's just been a healthy relationship.
Okay. All right, that's nice. That's nice. That's the political correct answer that I
It's got. True, man. I swear. I would tell you. I would tell you right now. No, hey. It's been cool.
No, I feel you. I got accounts, I got profiles that I'm like, all right, I know I'm gonna be bigger than you guys one day, or I'm gonna be bigger than you one day. So it's like I got it in the back of my mind. It's like, all right, keep, you know, you're gonna have your run, but it's like I'm gonna be fucking like a massive deal later on. So you know, and
I see books.
I gotta fucking play like mind games with myself like that.
Yeah. But I do see books. I see stuff out there that is being distributed, you know, at a massive scale. That's good work. But when I read it, I'm like, damn, like I think tights can play in this arena. And so that's what keeps me going, is when I read new books that get, you know, really great reviews, and I read them and I enjoy them. You know, I know it's my baby. It's hard to be objective, but I try to be. And I know when I'm humbled, when I read something, I'm like, shit, that kills it beyond my abilities. And I'm cool with that. But when I see something that's pretty close, I'm like, again, that drives me. I'm like, all right, man, if they can get this out there, I think eventually maybe tights can get out there too.
Yeah. I wonder if it's, and this isn't just for like lesser known comics, but this is in general. Like, I wonder if it's good to have like a leaderboard of like indie comics, or if there's like a way to do it. I don't know. I know like Webtoons has it. I don't know if Voice.me has it for their project, but like they'll have like leaderboards, or like this is like the top one trending this week and shit like that.
Yeah.
I wonder if that helps. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I'll go in and I'm like, this doesn't look like something for me. But yeah, then I'll see something at like spot 17, like, oh, this looks fire. So I don't know.
Yeah. Could well, be. Global Comics, they're also kind of blowing up. I don't know how. I got to visit that. I got to go back to the site. But they might be able to do something like that. You know, like, you know, Comixology, that's really just the biggest books on planet Earth. But again, Global Comics is a mix of, they got some heavy hitter publishers who are now part of that world, but for the most part, it's indie books. So I think someone like them, where they can honestly just show you how many people are reading what, and then they could stack them up. I think they do something like that. I think you can do like most popular, and that's actually really interesting. I'm gonna jump back on there because I know they've made some changes, but that's a good idea because yeah, you could see what's killing it out there, and again, be like, yeah. Huh? Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Gotta check that out. But yeah, other than that, man, Chris, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate you you know, just willing to hop on, man. I gotta show love and thanks to anyone that, you know, I always see myself as like a little like nobody, and just for people to say, yeah, I wanna hop on, it's like a godsend, man. It's like that, you know, like I told you, it's like asking on a first date and it's like you don't wanna get denied, but you know, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Anything you wanna plug before we get out of here?
Yeah. Well, really quickly, I went through Mark. So I'm like, dude, I see B minus. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to, I got to have an in. Connect me with him. So I went through him to get a date with you. So yeah, you know that.
There we go. The matchmaker right there.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm a laid back guy. The thing is just the timing and the busyness. It's like if I'm working on a bunch of stuff, I already allotted like a specific amount of slots, and like we'll talk about this on Patreon, but for Mark, because we already had like an in-depth conversation. So it's just like, all right, cool. And I'm actually hopping on a call with him on Wednesday to like figure out a couple of things that he wants to do with Comic Wellsprings. But it was like, yo, I already had it locked and loaded for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. And then, well, shoot, tights issue 3. I think by the time you release this, you know, July 25th, we are launching, and, you know, we've had a lot of fun. We've got a lot of really good feedback with the other Kickstarters. You can get a digital copy for, you know, $5. You can get prints for cheap. And then we got some really fun collector stuff that will never be, you know, you'll never be able to get outside of the Kickstarter. And then of course, stretch goals, we get real fun with that. We've raffled off skateboards before, tight skateboards and stuff for free to whomever. You could get a PDF and then you'll be in that raffle. The more you spend, of course, the more virtual tickets. So we want to keep it fun and, you know, keep getting people to come back. So yeah, just look up tights issues 1 through 3 Kickstarter. You'll probably find it. Check it out. We got also preview pages. There's a link there, but if you go to tightscomicbook.com, you can read the first 9 pages of issue 1 just to see if you like it. Like, I'm not gonna push anyone to just blindly, you know, jump into here. You know, go to tightscomicbook.com, see if you like it, and if you do,
I'm gonna let everybody know.
Come check us out.
It's got my
thank you.
It's fire. It's like I said, like the first a couple of pages is funny, and then you see this guy pop in, you think he's a superhero, and then he ices the freaking hostage by a mistake, like right in their forehead. And it's like, oh shit, like this is the type of time that we're on. Amazing story, yeah. Something that is original that, you know, I personally haven't seen before. I love it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man.
No problem, man. No problem. But other than that, YouTube, we are out of here. I will catch you guys later. Deuces.
See ya.